Sunstone Theological Society presents Drawing the Church, Editorial Cartoonists, and Mormon Culture. Recorded live at the 1988 Sunstone Theological Symposium, held August 17th through the 20th, 1988. We take you to the University Park Hotel in Salt Lake City, Utah, where the program is just now beginning.
My name is Dan Marion, and this is a session sponsored by Dialogue. In the January symposium that Sunstone held in Los Angeles, we had a panel discussion by journalists who wrote about the church. We decided to follow that up with a panel of cartoonists, who editorial cartoonists, and their relationship with the church and what they do. We're going to be very flexible in the session. You're very welcome to ask questions as we look at some cartoons or questions you have on almost any topic, I suppose. Pat Bagley will begin first. He's an editorial cartoonist at the Salt Lake Tribune. He'll show some samples of cartoons and talk about them and take your questions. Calvin Grondel will follow. He is presently an editorial cartoonist with the Ogden Standard Examiner. After we get through all of that, Bert Wilson from the Department of English at BYU will have some comments about editorial cartooning. Perhaps not specifically about the cartoons you see here, but he'll be commenting on cartoons in general. So that's pretty much the format. And if you have questions, please raise your hand and wait to be acknowledged. And we'll try and get as many of them as we can and ask you to make them as brief as possible as well.
I think a little background would probably be helpful when I show you the cartoons. I was born in Salt Lake City. I was raised in Southern California. Some people say that explains my aberrant view of Mormonism. But came back to BYU and got my education, if you can call it that, down at BYU. that explains it. But I started cartooning. It was a fluke, really. When I would take notes during the classes, I would sometimes scribble in the class notes, you know, little cartoons, little sayings that I had the teachers doing things, and it was pretty juvenile. But it entertained me as I was taking the class notes. And one day, there was an issue on campus that the Justice Department was going to sue BYU because BYU would not let men and women share the same apartment. And that sparked something, so I did this cartoon and ran it up to the Daily Universe. And, you know, I got a cartoon. You want to use it? And I thought they would have their cartoonist take the idea and do it. And their cartoonist at the time happened to be Steve Benson. Does anybody here know who Steve Benson is? Yeah. Steve Benson is the cartoonist for the Arizona Republic, who's been, besides being the grandson of Ezra Taft Benson, he also took on Evan Meekum down there and was one of the reasons that Evan Meekum was impeached. But he was the cartoonist at the time, and I thought they would have Steve do the cartoon, and you know that would be the end of my cartooning. Okay, there. So I took it to the paper, and they said, "Well, we really like the idea, and why don't you do a finished copy of this for us, and we'll see if we can run it." So I took it back to my apartment, you know, did a quick finished copy, and then took it back to the paper. And it came out, and you know that was the greatest thing that happened to me since I got home from my mission. It was, you know, it was really a highlight. And then from there, I got a job as a cartoonist on the school paper, working with Steve Benson. And for about a year, two semesters, Steve and I were both working on the school paper, and we would alternate slots on the editorial page where we would have the cartoon. And Steve and I still keep in touch every now and then. We run into each other. But as I was doing this, I was building up a little portfolio, and I thought, I wonder if this stuff is any good. So we decided, well, let's go up and see Cal Grondahl, who had been doing cartoons for, oh, five, six, 7 years before we were working at the BYU. And he was then working at the Deseret News. So we took him up there and got the benefit of his advice. I remember, very timidly showing him my cartoons and saying, is this okay? And, very offhandedly giving his criticisms. And I went home and wrote it all down in my journal and treasured it. But since I've got to know him, I really don't care what he says. So anyway, that was kind of the genesis of my cartooning. From BYU, I went on to work for the Salt Lake Tribune, and I've been there for 10 years. This is my decade as a cartoonist in Salt Lake City. And most of the time I've been working opposite Cal Grondahl, who's been the cartoonist for the Deseret News until recently, and he's since moved to the Standard Examiner, but he can tell you about that. And it's been a very interesting relationship. Cal Grondahl was the first cartoonist to really do Mormon cartoons. He's kind of like Columbus. Once he discovered the New World, others followed. And I'm one of those that kind of picked up on this whole new world that's just ripe for exploitation. And I came out with a book a couple years ago on Mormon humor. But it was really Cal that got the thing that discovered the whole genre. I'm currently working on another book. Now, this book isn't going to be exclusively Mormon humor. It's going to be humor about Utah. There's so much going on in Utah that I thought I would take that slant. And there are things that Mormons will appreciate and that have to do with the church, since the church is an integral part of the state. And I've brought a few teasers of what's going to appear in the book in December to give you a flavor of what it's going to be. Now, working at a paper in Utah and dealing with the church is like sharing a room with a 500-pound gorilla. I mean, you have to walk very timidly around it and make sure that you don't step on toes. The Salt Lake Tribune, contrary to all the rumors and reports, is very sensitive about what it says about the church. And very rarely will they let me do a cartoon about the church. And so what I do is I save those cartoons. It's not like I don't do them. I do them. But I save them, and when I have enough, I do a book every couple of years. Let's start with the cartoons. Is there a way to turn the lights down even more? Yeah. My early work, it's not focused. Okay, here we go. Some guy standing outside of Temple Square. I guess you can see it. Yeah, this is from the last book. A newspaper says President Benson, Mormon prophet, maybe Mormon prophet. And the genesis of this was in my mission field. There was a friend of mine who was a Democrat, and he swore that if Ezra Taft Benson ever became prophet, that would be the thing that would force him to leave the church. And that kind of stuck with me. I kept in contact with him, and he didn't leave the church because of Ezra Taft Benson, but he grouses about it quite a bit. Oh, describe them? Okay. Okay, this one, it's Church Publications. It's obviously in the... there. obviously in the church magazine department, and they're kind of looking at this idea that somebody's come up with, and I'm having a hard time reading this. It says something like, they wanted us to design a new magazine about Mormon singles. It's called Pent Up. Can we tilt that a little way this way so I can see it? the thing that inspired me at this time was I was single at the time. I was single at the time, and it just seemed like the church that to deal with the sexual pent-up frustrations, they would probably come up with a magazine, you know, to help you. Okay, and this is in the midst of the Joseph Smith and magic. And in the first panel, you've got Emma Smith grabbing Joseph's hat that he's been looking in. And she's saying, give me that. And then she's going on to say, you know, every day it's something, looking at peepstones, looking into hats, doing this, doing that, digging up treasures. So she slams down this cup of tea in front of him and says, now drink your tea and start thinking about fixing the house. And then in the last frame, he's peering into the teacup and he says, interesting, these tea leaves. It's pretty self-explanatory. You know, the iron rotter and life isn't simple. a guy sitting in church, different meetings in church. In the first frame, he's listening to somebody say, home teaching is the heart of the church. Then in the next meeting, the welfare program is the heart of the church. The next one is, temple work is the heart of the church. Then the fourth frame, genealogy is the heart of the church. In the fifth frame, they're saying, tithing is the heart of the church. Then he's at work, and some guy's saying, Harry, you're a Mormon, what's your church like? And he says, it's all heart. again, this is something that I picked up in church is, you know, everything was the most important thing. No matter what it was, it happened to be the most important thing. And talking to my wife, I find out that it's true in, especially true in Relief Society, you know. No matter what you do, it's the most important thing. I guess you can read it. A guy's in a bishop's office. Obviously, they're there for confession, but he doesn't seem all that concerned. Kind of draped all over the chair, and the bishop is saying, "Would you mind elaborating on, quote, technically still a virgin?" Okay, here's a couple of home teachers visiting a home where the roof is obviously leaking. She's got pots and pans all over the place, and the house is a mess. And the home teachers are talking to this very elderly woman, and they're saying, it's a pleasure to home teach you. If there's anything we can do for you, just let us know. Okay, this is for the Mormon intellectual crowd. The primary teacher is saying, everyone is special. And this little girl raises her hands and she says, but Sister Jepson, if everyone is special, then isn't that another way of saying that no one is special, therefore rendering your statement meaningless? And the last frame is... Next week's lesson is on why we shouldn't intellectualize the gospel. For some reason, I like this one. Okay, describing it, you got a couple of Arnold Freeberg characters here. And one of them has got an arrow sticking out of them, and it looks like he's dying from this arrow wound. And the guy is trying to lift him up behind him, and he's saying, oh my gosh, you're hit! And then the guy pulls out this pocket. Well, it says, lucky for me, I was carrying my pocket scriptures, and it's a small version of the Golden Plates. You know, you've all heard of the story of the guy who misses getting killed because he's got the scriptures in his the pocket. They should make bulletproof vests out of, you know, scriptures, pocket scriptures. Yeah. Okay, and this has to do with the BYU Center in Jerusalem. So some Mormon administrator is trying to explain to the Israeli government. He says, us, proselyte in your country? Obviously, you don't know anything about the Mormons. Then he gets this bright idea. Would you like to know more? I mean, it's almost like we can't help ourselves, you know. Okay, this is General Conference. And the guy at the podium is saying, the leadership of the church is always in complete accord. And behind him, you see the other general authorities saying, yep, that's what I was going to say. Again, I'm having a hard time reading this. Somebody else is saying, darn, I was going to say that. You know, what am I going to talk about? Okay, this is from the new book. These haven't been published yet, but they'll be coming up very shortly. In this one, you've got a picture of the Hotel Utah being sat on by a 500-ton gorilla. And there's this guy who's got a placard down by the front entrance, and the placard says, Save the Hotel Utah. And the gorilla, who's labeled the church, is explaining, let me put it this way, where does a 500-ton gorilla sit? Anywhere it wants to. I know friends of mine who are able to, you know, the church does pretty much, they don't get upset about very much. But when the church was so callous about the way they handled the whole Hotel Utah thing, even these people got upset about it. And so it's kind of referring to the insensitivity to the rest of the community. Some anonymous general authority in his church office, and he's calling on his intercom to a secretary. He says, Sister Finchley, I'm tired of these newspaper articles accusing the church of calling all the shots in Utah. Have the state legislature pass a resolution denying it. Now, I don't know if you are familiar with this story. It's a true story that a few years ago, the legislature had appointed a committee to come up with recommendations to kind of streamline the liquor laws. Not make it easier, but kind of streamline things. And they came out with this recommendation. The legal committee was put on this, and they came out with a recommendation and submitted it to the Senate. But the Senate had to get a sponsor from one of the senators to have the thing submitted. And not one of the senators would touch it. Not one would put their name to this bill. So somebody on the committee said, let's take it down to the church office building and see what they say. So they took it down to the church office building and ran it by, the story goes, they ran it by Gordon B. Hinckley. And he said, I don't see any problem with this. And word got back to the state capitol before these people did. And by the time they got back up there, well, by the time the bill was submitted, every single state senator sponsored it. Every single senator put their name to it. Yeah. Okay. You got bodies lying all over the place. It's obviously kind of a low-rent church kind of thing. And the guy at the podium is saying, all those in favor of sustaining me, Vernon, Parley, Oren, Hiram, as prophet seer and revenging angel of the firstborn church of the last days, please manifest by the usual sign. And in the background, you see his henchman with a smoking gun who's just, you know, wiped out the opposition. This has to do with the splinter groups, you know, the all-red kind of thing, the LeBarons and all that. Okay, this is outside of Temple Square. I don't know if you've seen the people handing out anti-Mormon literature outside the gates of Temple Square. But in this one, we have a woman, a temple, been beating on this guy who's outside the Temple Square. And the caption is, Temple Square guide Sister LaDawn Pruitt administers divine justice to born-again anti-Mormon leaflet distributor Les Groznick. You know, and the people behind her trying to pull her back in. Oh, boy. Okay, this is related to a story that a few years ago, some gay alliance coalition in Salt Lake City petitioned the Days of 47 parades to have a float sponsored by them in the parade. And, you know, naturally they thought it would be in poor taste, so they denied the motion. But this is kind of a what-if scenario. You know, what if the Sons of the Gay Pioneers actually submitted a float? And the guy in the float is saying to the Days of 47 official, he's saying, what do you mean it's inappropriate? Ooh, you people are so insensitive. Intolerant. Oh, intolerant. Okay, that's it. That's all I brought. How about if I take a few questions and then we'll get on to Cal?
Can you regularly leave the church too?
I try not to. Sometimes I'll use the church news for pictures, you know, trying to get a certain look for something when I'm doing Mormon cartoons. I'll refer to it.
Where does most of your stuff come from?
Where does most of my stuff come from? Usually if something gets me upset, you know, something sets me off then, I'll kind of let that germinate, and something will usually come out of it. You know, you take any idea to its absurd limits, and you come up with a cartoon about it. Any other questions? Which church do I belong to now? I haven't gotten any official reaction from the church. And it's partly because this stuff is so high profile that, and not only that, the Deseret News. So I'm kind of beyond their reach. Oh, one official reaction? Well, my neighbors pray for me. I know a cartoon is a good cartoon, though, when I'll run it over to my neighbors and show it to them, and they laugh. The first reaction is to laugh. And then they go, I shouldn't have done that. I think you've gone too far. They give me a pretty free hand at the Salt Lake Tribune. I usually work up two or three ideas a day, and from those I'll do a final cartoon and then put it in the paper, and by that time the only person who can kill it is the publisher, which is quite a bit different from the Deseret News, where they've got this chain of command that you've got to get the thing submitted to. But again, you'll have to ask Calvin about that. So the Salt Lake Tribune is fairly good about that. And I come up with 7, 8, 9 cartoons a week sometimes. Well, all my friends accuse me of not working. You know, they say it's wonderful to have a job where you don't work. But, you know, every time I watch the news, or any time I read Newsweek or Time, you know, I'm putting grist in the mill, and it'll come out later in some form or other. The actual time that I spend working on a cartoon during the day works out to 4 or 5 hours a day. And then the rest of the time, you know, I'm either chatting or reading newspaper articles or that kind of thing. Okay, the question is, are there any subjects that are off-limits? The church is one that generally is off-limits. When the Hotel Utah issue came up, the board of the Tribune was so incensed that they let me do a cartoon about the Hotel Utah. But usually it doesn't get approved. For instance, when... Oh, what was her name? The Mormon dissident, the woman, Sonia Johnson. When that thing kind of blew up, it was a very slow news week. And all the cartoonists across the country, Mike Peters, Conrad, Oliphant, they all had something to do with that issue. They all did cartoons about that. And Cal did one, and I did one. But, you know, here we are in the middle of it, and our cartoons get killed. Well, all these other cartoons were getting sent to Salt Lake City. They're doing it. And it's kind of like being in the middle of a tornado, and you've got to pretend that nothing is happening, you know. Okay, I guess I'll... One more question and I'll...
When you said sometimes something upsets you, and you draw the cartoon, you find some sort of denouement?
Some kind of release? Well, yeah, it really helps me. You know, it's a great relief to me. But when I actually do it and get it out there, it just kind of spreads the anger. You know, some people see it and don't agree with the cartoon. It'll make them upset. But the point of cartooning is not to upset people, but it is to get people to kind of re-examine things and to think things through again, to show things in a different light. Cartoons are, it's like being blindsided on the freeway. You know, you don't expect it to come that way, but it hits you, and it hits you hard. And, you know, ideally, that's what a good cartoon should do. Cal's done a great one on that. In fact, this would be a good time to let Cal talk. Yeah, the Mormon Architects, didn't you?
Okay.
Yeah, one quick question. Yeah, I did something on the tax initiative. The way I portrayed it was showing them axing a school bus, you know, tearing apart a school bus. And there's a word that they're using in the tax initiatives, getting rid of those administrative costs, I guess. And they're tearing apart the school bus a little bit. Thank you.
In here late. I'm sorry. I was over at the Desert News reminiscing with some friends, watching them. They were drinking caffeine drinks, and I wasn't drinking any. And kind of wishing I had. You know, I haven't had a Coke for 2 days now. My doctor took me off caffeine. So again, so I'm going to be a little nervous. I probably get everything backwards, but I'll do the best I can. Now, I'm as usual. I procrastinated my preparation until the end, and I don't have the slides I promised to bring, but what I did bring was some overhead transparencies and some originals. And what I have is I don't have anything from my last book, Marketing Precedes the Miracle. All the originals belong to the publisher. And what I have is some stuff that we've done in the church section of the Standard Examiner during the last year or so. And I just grabbed a bunch, and looking at some of the padded showing, I see I wish I would have brought more of them, you know. But we'll just go through and we'll show them as best we can and talk, and then please ask questions, you know, as we go. Some of what I have brought are some originals, and you can't see them, I know, and you're welcome to come up afterwards and take a look at them, but I'll try to explain them to you and so you kind of imagine what they look like. You know, first of all, I have some transparencies over here. And I have a grab bag of some Velux copies taken off the page itself. And if I had an opaque projector, we could project them out, but I didn't ask for one. So once again, I apologize for that. And we'll start with just a couple of these explaining. First of all, I had a book that came out last Christmas. It was the fourth one in a series called Marketing Precedes the Miracle. I brought one cartoon that I think got me in trouble. I'm not sure which one it was, but it wasn't sold in Deseret book. And either, in fact, the one before that wasn't either, but this last book was even more difficult to get into the bookstore. And that was fine. I think we sold out the first 5,000 copies in a week out of a dozen bookstores. And that's pretty good for considering the market. And through the whole experience, I just had a great time. I was so relieved to have the book done. I did 70 cartoons in 7 days. And I took a week off, and I'll never do that again. And we had a lot of errors in the book that I think they were proofreading it on the way to the press. And so, but anyway, people, the reaction was very positive. And so if you've seen that book, you'll have a general idea of most of my work and what I do. But like I said, I'm just going to show some other ones. And I'm bringing these primarily because you probably haven't seen these, because these have just been in the Ogden Market area. Okay, first of all, one of the neat things about working up to the standard is I can do cartoons on the Last Temptation of Christ, which I couldn't do at the Deseret News one way or another. I couldn't even come out against the movie at the Deseret News because there's no comment. Okay, and I hope I can remember the caption because I forgot to put it on here. But it's basically, it shows these two people, and you're looking at a television set, and the priest happens to look like Gene Siskel, and the born-again Christian kind of looks like Roger Ebert. And they've got a system where they got 4 stars for moral movie, 3 stars for liberal film, 2 stars for too much kissing, 1 star for sex. And they got 1 B for some blasphemy, 2 Bs for too much blasphemy, and 3 Bs for a lot of blasphemy, and 4 Bs for they'll burn in hell. And so they're just basically saying, well, we've just reviewed The Last Temptation of Christ, and it gets 1 star and 4 Bs, you know, mostly next week and at the movies and stuff. And so now the Christianity's in the movie business. And I did this cartoon because I think this cartoon, I show this first, it kind of sums up what kind of cartoons I do. I didn't show Jesus hanging on the cross and thinking something. And I think Steve Benson did a cartoon like that. It was a really good cartoon. But there's something about me. I'm not as much, I don't have the temperament. You know, I want to be a musketeer, but I don't have the heart of a musketeer. Editorial cartooning is, like Steve Benson says, the job of an editorial cartoonist is to go around through the battlefield and then shoot all the wounded. And and that's great, and I love that. I laugh too. I think it's wonderful. I want to be part of that team, but I don't have the heart. I like to do things like in the New Yorker or things, little things like, you know, family situations, and both Pat and Steve would agree on this. But I do fairly well, and so my stuff doesn't have quite the edge, but. So what I just did was just have a nice little situation. You know, it really isn't derogatory one way or the other. It's just having fun with it. And that's the point of my purpose, I think, in the church, is that as a cartoonist, I'm here just to have fun. And I'm, and they say, well, people think, too. They see the cartoons. So that's fine. But I'm having a good time being a member of the church, except when, you know, I have a hard time in sacrament meeting, too, you know what I mean? Staying awake, trying. Sometimes I slap the kid. He's, come on, he's crying. I got to take him out, you know. And it's the same thing week after week after week. And I think that's one of the reasons why people love Mormon cartoons, because they're fresh. It's a new thing, and Mormons are desperate for something new. Please give me something new. Okay. You know. And I just got back from a river trip with our religious writer, John DeVilbus, who's over here taking notes. And without him, we couldn't be doing these kind of things up there. He's also a Colorado River, a river guide, and he took me on a trip. And when we came back, you always say, where do you get your ideas? Well, they come from your own experiences. And we happen to have, as a coincidence, a story written about ministers, you know, who they need to get away. They're under too much stress. And one of the things they suggested was go on river trips. So what we have is, it's a little teeny cartoon, but it's a river, it's a raft, and this minister is sitting in there, and he's riding down. He's got his little adventure hat on. There's rocks and rafts, and the guy's sitting there drinking a beer, and a whole raft full of beer. And he's saying, and the minister just obviously suggesting, now, what should I write for a sermon? He says, and the guy is saying, how's this for a sermon, Pastor? The river is life, the rocks are like sin, and the beer is the Holy Spirit to just get you through. And so he's drinking a beer, and away we go, because our outdoor editor, you know, we 2 days on the trip, and you ran out of beer, you know, things were getting pretty desperate, but... that's basically where the cartoons come from. They come from life and experience. And I've had a lot of fun with the liquor laws. I know some of these subjects kind of skirt around direct gospel, but it all has to do with Utah lifestyle. And here you have, this is what you have, is a picture of a bar, and the bartender's there, and these people have just come in, a man and woman, and then on there is this new Utah law. I can bring the blank to your table, but I cannot tell you what the blank, that the blank is available, so you'll have to choose a blank on your own. And the guy's saying, it's either about a mini bottle or a birth control device. I can't figure out which one is which. I have some more mini bottle things before we go. It's have you ever seen, you know, like you watch those movies and people say you're wasting your time filling your head full of junk, but I remember those old movies, you know, about they're handling deadly organisms, and here's this robot arms coming, and he's got a plate, and it's like a little table, and he's holding a mini bottle, the robot is, and these two scientists are in the back, they're running the robot arms. He says, now carefully move the mini bottle to the table. One slip, and we could have a moral meltdown all the way to liquor by the drink. Here's another one that we run at the Standard. Just no way I could have got away with it anywhere else. And he says, and they're sitting in the living room, and there's a television on. This new wave kid sitting there, and he's saying, father's working on a crossword puzzle on the paper, and he's saying, what's a six-letter word for something that can help stop the spread of AIDS? And she's reading the Bible and saying prayer, and the little kid's saying condom. So the purpose of the cartoon is, it shows you the difference. You know, I mean, you teach them the way they should go, and when they're old, they'll do it their way. So, this is one that I did at the Desert News, and I just saved it for a year. And it just shows this box, and there's rabbits all piled in it, and this kid is talking to his teacher, and rabbits are jumping all over. He says, for my science project, I have created a model of the problem facing the Utah education system, starting with two rabbits. And so you have... And I'll tell you how I get away with murder up there. I can't believe it. You know, I mean, I actually have this one. I think their head editorial writer, Flora Ogan, who's really great to work for, a picture of Meekum, and he's just in all this cactus, and he's getting stuck with all these things. And it says, with courage and perseverance, I shall continue to kick against the pricks and stuff. And that's when he was using bad language, and I reassured them that it was just a biblical reference. It didn't have anything else. And they said, okay, we'll run it if that's the way you want it. It's gotten a little tighter up there, as John DeVilbiss can reassure you. First year up there, we were running all kinds of stuff. We had a cartoon. I didn't bring it. I wish it was on Mary, and it was something on the Pope that came out about. I can't remember exactly what it was, but you remember the controversy there was involving unnatural births and stuff like that. And so I had Mary thinking, well, I would have been in big trouble, as the statue was thinking. Is, you know, it was a little serious. It's not my normal style, and every time I do that, I know I'm going to be, you know, oh, it's going to hit. But it was a good cartoon, and we really tried, and we were trying everything. And oh yeah, there was a lot of all over, and there must have been 20, 30. Well, everybody did a cartoon like that. No, there was a lot. Yeah, to the paper. Yeah, what we're doing in Ogden is we're doing cartoons on all churches. Makes it difficult because I really don't have much experience, and, you know, in their faith, so I have to imagine things. I know, what is a minister's collar in the Anglican Church versus a Catholic, and, you know, and I have to be careful and stuff like that. But I enjoy it. It's kind of nice to mix it up once in a while. And I just have. Why don't we go to some of those so like they can I can prove to them I can draw, because they're not seeing anything but micro dots up here. This is a serious cartoon. And we'll start with something. This just shows a. This is on the Singer thing. What does it? It sounds like a bomb, but where is it coming from? It's just a bomb sound coming from John Singer's grave. You know, tick, 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 and they got their backs to it like that. That's just the editorial type ones. I don't like really doing those kind of things. I like doing more stuff like this. There's Welcome to Utah, mini bottles, maxi taxes, and free Temple Square tours. You got the vulture up there ready to pick their wallet. You know, when they move in. You wondered, you know, you'd think I was against taxes, all, you know. The thing is what I try to do with my cartoons is mix it up. It's like, you know, I mean, it's like being a sniper. You shoot at everybody out there. You don't discriminate against any race, creed, or color. Everybody's a target. Because oftentimes I really don't know how I feel about things. You know, I don't like paying a lot of taxes in Utah, but then I've got kids in school. So here's just another one. And Pat, could you read that for me? I can't see it either. The what are we going to do about AIDS? I think that's the rest. And they just ban it. I agree. All those in favor of banning AIDS, please say aye and all that stuff. That's sort of the Weber and Davis County approach. It's great. I'm cartooning from Davis County, the very center of intellectual appreciation. And that's how it runs up there. It's a lot of fun. I enjoy it. What is neat about Utah is just a small little population, like in Brigadoon, inside this little mountain enclave. And there's more going on there than there is anywhere else. You go down to California, and there's so many people you can't focus in on. It's like there's so many targets. You know, it just gets lost. You can't pick one out from the herd. And in Utah, it's a small enough population, and they're very eccentric in their own way. You know, they're all good people, and it's just a lot of fun. And and there's a lot of... Everything stands, you know, clearly. I mean, stands out distinctly. You know, the singers aren't just... You know, they're pretty distinct. This is a lot of fun. I really am not against law enforcement. This is a lot of fun. They're all sneaking up on the singers. You guys find your own tree to hide behind, you know. They're just a simple thing like that, you know, trying to sneak up on them. And I just bring those out because these are some of the ones they've done on the singer controversy and stuff. And this is a Church News one, and this is on the televangelist, the motel sleaze. And I don't remember. I can't read what it says, something of the fact that... Yeah, their televangelists are really taking the bait, and they've got some woman on the end of the line as bait and stuff, and it's just it's kind of generic, you know. And it's kind of what I liked about that cartoon is this character of the devil. He's kind of fun to draw, and I can't draw the other side without really being in trouble. So I kind of draw the opposition, which is kind of fair because I give him a lot of airtime. You know, it's like the Palestinians and other bozos, but they get all this airtime, you know. How come? You know? Well, because you can say anything you want about them, you know. They're bozos. Okay. And we believe Carl G. Mazur to be the former president of this school, so far as he's translated correctly. And they translated him without a beard, so that's the correct translation, see. You see. They've taken off the beard. So I don't know if I have it here, but we did one on the BYU Center in Jerusalem that John and I put together, and what it I didn't bring it, but what it shows is that the center looks like the Y up on the mountain. They built it in shape of the Y, and it's a rabbi saying to this Palestinian, he says, yeah, on homecoming day they light up the Y, you know, and so you have this big Y above Jerusalem, and what's funny about it, if you saw it, you know, but. But what's funny is John told me that they actually, the truth is, where I got this idea is that they designed the thing and then they have the lights from the stairways going up the center of the complex, and then have a row of lights with the library or someplace, and it's a cross. So at night they light up the BYU thing, and then these rabbis walk out and they see this giant lit cross, you know, on the side of the mountain of Hollis. They go, oh my gosh, you know, I mean. Most of the people just love us down there, I guess. Here we go. I don't know why. I just love Coop. Drawing Coop. He's got his own uniform, his own beard. He's like Brigham Young there. He says, I'm here to talk about condoms. And he says, no understand English or something like that. No understand, please. That English official state language. This was a bill that they had to say that Utah must make English the official state language. So I just got tied off on that. And I don't know why that's in there. I guess because the temple's back there and stuff. It's like the little, it's like China before Marco Polo. It's this little city back there. And it's a lot of fun. People say, who is this person with the sticks? And I don't know. I guess he's from a Monty Python movie I must have saw one time. And I wish they would do a film about us. It would be wonderful. We have another one? Keep going. Yeah. Oh, here, we've seen that. That's the one that I just talked to you about. I didn't know if I had another copy of that. That's what it looks like. These are editorial cartoons. When I draw the books, I use them in pencil because it's a little more dexterity and I get a better feeling, but it doesn't reproduce it at all. Is that all of them? Okay. Any questions as we're going along here? This would be good. I couldn't do anything else. I'm from North Dakota. We had a little branch up there, and my dad was a branch president. I was the... I blessed the sacrament and passed the sacrament and cleaned up the sacrament. I was, you know, if I didn't come, we didn't get passed. And I liked it better that way. I felt important. I felt that, you know, that God really cared about what I was doing. And then I came to Utah. It's like having a pearl of great price, and you sell all that you have for it, and you come to the city and find out they're laying hip deep in the street. There's so many pearls, you stumble through them. And what happens when you do that is you sort of lose your identity. And that's what's kind of nice about doing the cartoons, because it gives me an identity. You know, I got a purpose. You know, I'm special. But now that Pat's doing them, I'm not so special. So. But basically, the first book was published by Sunstone, by Peggy Fletcher, and she's the one that got it going. I did a Joseph Smith comic strip back in the 70s, and it was kind of cute. It was like Joseph Smith was Charlie Brown character, and the adversary was this minister, and Moroni, he didn't just come and go. He was a character. He was there all the time, enjoying life and going through and dressing in disguises and doing things, and they were having a great time. And I think that what's the cartoon I have in my last book about shows him walking, and he says, the meek shall inherit the earth. No, he says the big corporate. Moroni says that the big corporations will eventually inherit the earth. And Joseph Smith says, oh, I thought it was the meek that inherit the earth. And Moroni goes, oh, okay, the big meek corporations. I mean, do I have to get it right all the time? But that was one in the comic strip, and there were a few others. And then she saw that down at the, there was like copies all over. And my editor said, don't let any of these copies get around. You know, but someone up at BYU Press, and Peggy Fletcher saw them, she came down, she says, let's do these. I couldn't do them. I says, it's just too dangerous to do these. It's too hardcore right now. So we did a contemporary Mormon book called Freeway to Perfection. And ever since then, we've done four of them. And she was part of the first three books. And then of course, we had another publisher in the last one. But the cartoons are owned by the first three books by Sunstone. Now, what happens is that they just get the money together, and then we publish, and you do the cartoons, and you get a percentage and all that. It's just like any other book publishing. It'd be nice to have some books published nationally. This is such a limited subject, but it's a surefire winner in this market. In other words, you know, you're a big fish in a little pond. New York is tough. I've had a lot of projects go to New York and die. It's just too. It's very difficult. I don't know. Not Pat's got one coming out. I might have one next Christmas. And it's a lot of work, but I'm doing a lot of groundwork now at the Standard that maybe I can do some of those cartoons in another book. Anything. Well, I know. What I like to see is I want to go buy Steve Benson's book. Is what I want to see. I want to see Steve Benson's book on Meekum and all the other stuff. He's great, and I wish he was here today. I really do. And he's got. That's his situation he has to deal with. But he is really the strongest editorial cartoonist who's a Mormon today. His stuff is light years. I when he came and showed me his work, his drawing was better at BYU than when I was at BYU. It was a bit cluttered. He didn't know. He was putting too much in it. He needed a design change. And I mentioned that to him. I think it would broke him up or something. But he went back and he practiced, and he's wonderful. And both Pat and I do fairly well. We both, I think, do pretty good. But Steve is, and one thing about Steve is that he's got he's really has got the heart of an editorial cartoonist, sort of like Pat. And that's why this Meekum thing, he had such a great contribution to make down there, because he was the right man at the right place. But he's got an unusual situation he has to work for, so I understand that. You got a question? Well, the Deseret News is owned by the church. The church is very, well, it's very much into public relations now. It's not the way it was 100 years ago. I was talking over dinner to a friend of mine who's also a member of the church, very active about this yesterday, and just sort of thinking about what's the difference. And this isn't the same church it was 100 years ago. That church is totally gone. The only thing we have now is the priesthood and the writings. What we have now as a church is much more successful, much more accepted, and the people who run are very good at what they do. The thing is that there just isn't a lot of flexibility right now, because the church has got zeroed down on a specific thing, and it's trying to be the missionary to the world. And so it's big in public relations, big in advertising. And if you're doing that thing, you're fine. Now, what Pat and I do is we're playing around, you know, like the kids playing around, and making a mess of the house. And it's all good fun, but when you have company over, you know, and that's the thing. Like, we're doing cartoons about the Jerusalem Center, and it's a very touchy situation. One time, in fact, I'll show the cartoon now. I think, I don't know for sure if this is the one that kept it out of Deseret Book, but maybe it's one of the reasons. I have a cartoon here, and it's done in, it just shows this Mormon type holding the Book of Mormon, and it says, it's got a button, he's in front of the East German temple, and it says, better read than no baptism for the dead. And when I was a young kid, it was the other way around. And it's really funny, because that's what cartoon is all about. It's to show the little ironies of life. It's not to sit in judgment and say, well, I wouldn't do that. Because they say, well, what would you change in the church if you could today? I wouldn't change anything. I wouldn't tell, I'd say to the church leaders, you do it your way. You don't change anything for me, You have to do it your way. But when you do things, I have to do my job too. And what am I supposed to do is I'm supposed to look at these things and analyze these things. What is really happening? So it just shows this Russian guard, taking pictures of a Mormon temple. It had to be wonderful. You see Russian soldiers taking pictures. But and that was it. And I understand that was the one that was kind of a problem. The thing is, it's a very sensitive situation. I remember the day it happened that they announced that we were going to have a temple there, that suddenly we were just supposed to refer to the Germans as, the Federal Republic and the democratic thing. We're not supposed to call it East Germany anymore. And a church leader, I know who it is, but I won't mention his name, but there was concern, and it's real concern, and the Jerusalem thing and everything, the church is walking on eggshells, and I appreciate that, and we're playing with the nitro, back and forth, oh, look at this, it's fun, oh, boy. Which one, Karl Marx? Marcos. Oh, Pat was asking about the Marcos cartoon. It's difficult. I don't recall specifically what the cartoon is, but it was like Guatemala. The question, the problem is, when I do a cartoon on the junta in Guatemala, and they say, well, we got missionaries in Guatemala. I don't think they care. I don't think the junta is going to look at the Deseret News and go, oh, get me those missionaries and line them against the wall. They need our money, And the same thing with South Africa. It's a tough. So what happened is that the bigger the church got every year, the smaller I got. Because that's just the way it was. Maybe someday there'll be enough variety. We'll have Woody Allens who are Mormons. We'll have like the Jews. They've been around for thousands of years and they got great humor. Well, why? They're a big outfit. Mormonism is just a little teeny thing. In the world, you leave Utah and it's I'm sure we're 20 years ago. You talk to somebody, they wouldn't know, what is it? When I was in high school in Grand Forks, it was great being a Mormon. They thought I was, like the Amish, do you drive a car? Stuff and like that. They lot of it. They thought it was great. We got a Mormon. Wow. It's just like, we have a Hindu in our school. But now it's the Osmonds came, and then everybody knows who we are. Thanks to the Osmonds. Thank you. Any other questions? Yeah, the best cartoon is without any words at all. It's the more words it's the more stuff you put in the soup. Pretty soon it's a mess, and you can put so many things in it. You can keep it simple. That's the only thing that my last Deseret News publisher told me that was true is that keep it simple. And he proceeded to load me up with so much stuff that it was anything but simple to do a cartoon. But he was right on that point. It was keep it simple. And so the best cartoons are just straight. And in fact, the most popular one I've ever done in my books is the one with this blessing of this baby. It's in my first book, and everybody just loves that. It's just a little simple pencil drawing of shows the front of the chapel, and after they bless the baby, the father is holding up the baby like this, and it's a monster. It looks like it's got sharpened teeth, and he's so proud of this little monster, and everybody's kind of going, yes, that's nice, And there's no caption or anything to that. Which makes more sense than some of my Star Trek cartoons I had in the last book. I'm really going in the ozone now, I'm starting to do Star Trek Mormon cartoons. Any other cartoon? Freeway to Perfection and Faith Promoting Rumors, which Pat gave me the idea for that. That's Pat's idea. I was running out of time. I was at the last second. I didn't have a title, and Pat came up with that for me. He really helped me out on that one. And then it's Sunday's Foyer, which is kind of a weird one to figure out, but it's a takeoff on Saturday's Warrior, but everybody's in the foyer with their kids and nobody's in the meeting. One old lady is listening to the bishop talk, and everybody, and it's kind of fun because And then the last one was marking precedes the miracle. And I don't know, I thought that maybe when the book didn't go to Desert Book, that the title was offensive, but I have no indication of that. It wasn't supposed to be an insult to, because, you know, I mean, faith precedes the miracle is the truth and the way things should be. It's the ideal, and marketing precedes the miracle. That's the way it is. And okay, well. You can see I'm not an advertising mogul. Yes? Pencil I do for the books because it's really free and fast, and but it doesn't reproduce well. I do ink and unishade board for the paper because it's on newsprint and it's got to be really coarse. No, in fact, Pat and I went to the other cartoonist for this Desert News, Craig Holyoke. He's doing a valiant job there. He's doing some really good stuff. And we went to the cartoonist convention, and all the cartoonists from America editorial met in Milwaukee. And one of the seminars they had there, they were talking about that the cartoons that we're doing on the Unishade board are disintegrating. They're putting them in museums, and now they won't take them anymore. We're doing all these cartoons, and they'll be gone. They're just falling apart. Yeah. Well, the pencil ones will last, but the Unishade boards. But, you know, a cartoon, I don't feel so bad about it, because a lot of stuff, it's a cartoon, you know, it's not like, it's not really, you know, it's the Sistine Chapel. All this is little sketches, you know, it's like card tricks. And the ideas are really, you know, they have a lot of impact, but they just, you know, it's they evaporate pretty fast. And most of it will last, you know, but a lot of stuff, you know, I mean. What happened is when John and I, we went a year and we were doing what we wanted and we were playing with fire, and all of a sudden we did some cartoons and there was some problems, some letters, and I saw one of the letters that came from the Church Public Relations Department or somewhere, and there was some difficulty and there was some interaction between the owners of our paper, the Standard, and the church, and I don't know exactly the details, but we flinched, you know. And that's okay, because I think every newspaper in America flinches at something sometime. I mean, I get a lion's share of what I want to do compared to what I had before. So, but yeah, it's fine. Any kind of religious cartoons I can do. One of the problems I had was after the third book, I was informed by my publisher that, you know, that's it. You know, I mean, you can do cartoons on religion, but we don't want to see any, you know, really cartoons like that last book. In other words, he was telling me don't do any good ones, you know. We want mediocrity from you. And I said, fine, you know, I guess that's, you know, you hired me. I mean, I work for you, so I got no choice, you know. But I found a place where I could do what I wanted. And it was a nice place to work. You know, Desert News is a good paper in many ways. It's got a lot of good things in it. And if I was doing something else at the paper, I probably would have stayed there. The church takes good care of its employees. And but for cartooning, it was just too high of a price to pay. Yeah, I what I'd like to see is some more cartoonists. Pat and I are getting old, and well, you know, I mean, pretty soon there'll be reruns, you know, like Laverne and Shirley reruns. Our books will start coming out, you know. What I hope, the best thing to come from this is that somebody out there who's a member of the church, young member of the church, will look at the books and he'll want to join in, and he'll do stuff that's even better than what we're doing, because then I think we'll really succeed that way. Because I think that it's part of the Mormon culture now, and it's continuing to grow. I want to see the church. I want to see comedy films. I want to see all kinds of literature. And we, you know, in the last 20 years or so, things are really growing. I want it to continue, and it will. You know, we got 6 million Mormons, and if it goes to 60 to 160 million, it's just going to get thicker and deeper for the church headquarters. If they think they think this stuff is going to go away, it's not. It's just going to get better, and everybody's going to have more fun being a member of the church. And especially when foreign countries start contributing things. We have cartoons in Japanese and stuff, and Spanish and stuff. And I don't know Spanish, so we're going to have to rely on them to do it. Any other comments?
About ready.
Okay. About ready to close here. We'll take one last question here. Well, I can't make peace with after the third one, or? After the book or before the book came out? Do I need to? I don't know what he means by that. I just, pardon? The question was that I had to make peace with the church after the third book. I mean, the last book came out, and I don't think I was at war. I don't. I. I did the fourth book came out. I did the fourth book because I no longer was employed by the church, so I wouldn't lose my job over it. And they never really threatened me with my job at the Deseret News. You know, it isn't like that. You know, it's not that brutal. It's just that it's sort of like leaning on you a little bit. So I did the book, and there was some controversy. I just went down to BYU. They put me in the back of the bookstore, and it was really funny because people would come up and ask me, you know, for books. They thought I was a ploy at the bookstore, and I had a beard on. They'd look at me, and they couldn't understand what was wrong with this person, you know. And it occurred to them. They hadn't seen a beard for days, I mean, for weeks and stuff. But I had a great fun down there, and some of the BYU faculty would come up and talk to me. And so I had a wonderful time there. As far as making peace, I don't see if there was a problem. The church has never, they have never called me up. They never sent me a letter involving my books or tried to talk to me in any way. And I just have to assume the best. I assume that most of it's just fine. Okay, we have to go. I'll talk to you afterwards. Thank you for the time.
That cartoon of Moroni being shot in his pocket scriptures reminds me of a true story. The missionary who went in the field, his father gave him, his father had been wounded in the war and had the bullet dug out of him and kept it as a good luck item. Gave it to his son as a memento when the son went into the mission field, and he carried it around in his pocket. He was in the South and got into a heated debate with a fundamentalist minister who got so angry he finally threw his Bible at him as hard as he could, and it hit him in the chest, and his life was saved by the bullet that he had. I'm not going to talk specifically about any of the cartoons we've seen here today. In fact, I'm a little bit a skelter. That's because until just a few minutes before I got here, I didn't know if I would get here. I'd like to take as a starting point a statement that was made in the student review down at Provo, the review of Grondel's book, which said, "Grondel tirelessly plumbs the shallows of Mormon culture." Yeah, and I liked that statement, but then I started wondering, what are the shallows that are being plumbed? I began wondering, how far can a cartoonist go without getting into trouble, and why he can be reverent or she about one subject and not about another. As I thought about that, I thought of some of the work that I've done with folklore of Mormon missionaries, and I have been intrigued by missionary trickster stories. My friend John Harris and I have been collecting missionary lore for years, and we have a wide range. Away with it. I decided as I thought about this subject that maybe those trickster missionaries are a little bit like cartoonists. To illustrate this point, what I want to do is just read from an essay, not the whole essay, but I mean, just a short part of it, that I wrote some years ago called "Trickster Tales and the Location of Cultural Boundaries, a Mormon Example." And all I'm going to do here is just give you a brief sketch of the missionary trickster as that trickster evolves from the stories that missionaries themselves tell. And while you hear me read this, I think you would enjoy this more if you would envision, if you could, the kinds of cartoons Bagley and Grondel might draw about some of these statements that I read. And I try to contrast the trickster with the straight missionary. In order to make a favorable impression on the people they contact and try to convert, good missionaries follow a strict dress and grooming code. The trickster ignores this code. His appearance is slovenly, his hair disheveled, he wears tattered, threadbare clothing, he washes his smelly underwear only once a month, he brushes his teeth with another missionary's toothbrush, and he uses his tie to wipe his nose, clean his car, windshield, and shine his boots. Good missionaries honor, obey, and fear their mission president. The trickster defies ridicule. Mission president asks him why he has come on a mission, expecting a cliched answer, "Because I love people and love to teach them." The trickster answers, "Because my dad said he'd buy me a car if I came." When the mission president, in front of a visiting church dignitary of still higher authority than himself, asks for the keys of the mission car, the trickster gives them to him and mocks, "Drive carefully and come home early." When the mission president scolds him for his sloppy habits and tells him to start brushing his teeth regularly, the following day the trickster takes his toothbrush and paste from his desk in the mission office and in front of the entire mission staff, vigorously brushes his teeth, and then just swallows the paste and goes on working. When the mission president chews him out for his mistake, the trickster responds, "Thank you, President. We'd like to accept suggestions from any board." Good missionaries treat sacred practices with reverence. The trickster mocks them. He fishes on the Sabbath. He wonders aloud if the baptism he has just performed will be recognized in heaven. When he buys a week's groceries, he spreads them out on the table and blesses them all at once. So he will not have to waste time blessing the food each meal. When he gets food poisoning, he quits blessing the food altogether, claiming that blessings do no good. Good missionaries forget the pleasures of the world, and for the duration of their missionaries devote themselves full tilt to proselyting. The trickster goes on unauthorized trips, goes fishing, and participates in a variety of forbidden sports activities. He skis, surfs, attends bullfights, rides in a rodeo, beats up a local karate champion, and enters the mission car in an auto race. Good missionaries abide by local laws and heed local customs, taking care not to offend the people they are trying to reach. The trickster is arrested for fishing without a license. He dupes a policeman about to ticket him for speeding. In Finland, he breaks up a communist rally by firing a starter gun, and in Italy interferes with a similar rally by throwing water on the crowd or by scattering money for members of the crowd to pick up. In defiance of local sensitivities, he has his picture taken on public statues and goes swimming in a beautiful fountain at a public park. Finally, good missionaries are always polite. They turn away wrath with a smile and never respond in kind to the hostility of angry people. The trickster, on the other hand, beats these people at their own game. When a jokester says, "I hear you guys believe in baptism by immersion," and throws a bucket of water on the missionaries, the trickster replies, "Yeah, and we also believe in laying on of hands," and then knocks him out. When a nosy woman snickers, "I hear you Mormons wear secret underwear," the trickster replies, "Well, isn't your underwear secret? Or, ma'am, there's nothing secret about our underwear. If you'll show us yours, we'll show you ours." When a red-headed woman fumes, "I know what you guys do. You come over here to get all the women, and you take them back to Salt Lake and sell them." The trickster answers, "That's right. We just sent a shipment off last week. In fact, we had 10 with red hair and lost $1 apiece on them." Well, the article goes on to talk about the duality in the trickster, the fact that he not only breaks all the rules, or seems to, or many of them, but also that he somehow manages to keep the mission going. And you have the dual nature of the trickster, who fights against the system and keeps the system functioning. And then it points out that the trickster, Mormon missionary trickster hero, does not, as is often thought of tricksters, quite break all the rules. For example, there are no stories like in these brief statements I gave you come out of longer narratives. The missionaries tell plenty of stories about those who do sacrilegious things, who test the priesthood by ordaining a Coke bottle to the priesthood, or who pray to the devil for a manifestation of the devil. Or they tell a lot of stories about missionaries who get involved in sexual activities and end up getting excommunicated and sent home. But these are not trickster stories. These are not stories that the missionaries laugh at. So it would seem, as we look at these trickster stories, that there are some things we can laugh about and some things that we can't. And I guess I would call those things the shallows and the depths. If Gondel and Blakely and others probe the shallows, they are the things that will make us laugh and make us feel good maybe about ourselves. The depths are another thing. Let me read you, continue with the later part of this essay. Missionaries know which rules they can violate and still remain missionaries, and which rules, if broken, will bring an abrupt end to their missions. Though they may be severely chastised for doing so, they can mock their mission president, break grooming standards, pay undue heed to worldly pursuits, defy local customs, and act in an arrogant manner. They can do these things, and still, if they mend their ways, continue as missionaries. Those are the shallow things they can do.
If they violate the sexual code or if they mock God or court Satan, they will no longer be missionaries. In the first instance, those are the depths. In the first instance, they will be excommunicated and sent home in disgrace. In the second, they may forfeit their lives. The missionary trickster will therefore violate the first set of rules, never the second. But we are dealing with much more here than with the means of discovering what missionaries think they can get away with and what they cannot. We are dealing with what they feel in their bones to be correct behavior. Missionaries clearly make a distinction between the rules they are expected to follow. The trickster breaks those rules the missionaries believe to be tiresome but necessary for the governance of the system. He obeys those rules which they believe to be true and enduring principles, however difficult to follow, that must always govern their lives. It would seem, then, that the rules the trickster keeps, not those he breaks, mark the absolute boundaries of missionary society. They are the rules missionaries cannot violate, even vicariously, without putting both the society and themselves in jeopardy. I think it would be interesting to see, to make a list of the subjects perhaps that Grandel and Begley don't write or produce cartoons about, and see why those subjects have not been treated. If the subject matter of the cartoons parallels issues which the people themselves find irksome and which they tell jokes about themselves, the cartoonist may be considered an irreverent nuisance for treating these subjects, but he'll usually survive. If, on the other hand, he moves too far from the shallows into the depths of what the people consider sacred or fundamentally important as in their religious lives, then the cartoonist is likely to get into trouble. For example, you can have a lot of cartoons about the foibles and the silly mistakes of culture-bound missionaries, and we can laugh at those very comfortably. But if you make cartoons about the need for sharing the gospel with other people, you're moving from the shallows to the depths. You can make, as both of these gentlemen have, interesting cartoons about sex. I think of the Grandel cartoon, I think it's yours, where you have the missionaries walking by this scantily clad, curvaceous young woman, and the one says to the other, "Sing a hymn, elder, sing a hymn." Reminds me of a missionary item where the two missionaries walking down the street pass a woman much like that, and the one elder says to the other, grabs him by the arm, and says, quick, quote a scripture. And he replies, "And there were celestial bodies." So you make that kind of jokes. You can make jokes about pent-up. But then when you move from those shallows to the depths of the need for sexual purity and chastity, you're moving into that other area. Let me conclude this, and I wanted my comments just to be short, with a final paragraph from this essay. Barry Tolkien, a friend of mine, once took a member of the Coos Indian tribe to visit his Navajo friend Yellow Man. While there, the visitor told a coyote trickster tale, and Yellow Man listened politely. When the tale was completed, Yellow Man turned to Tolkien and said, "Where did he learn that story? From a missionary? That's not a coyote story." When Tolkien protested that the story was in most details similar to the coyote stories Navajos tell, Yellow Man responded, "Coyote ate fish in the story. Coyote doesn't eat fish." When Tolkien explained that members of the visitor's tribe do eat fish, Yellow Man shuddered. Evidently, just as there are things a missionary trickster cannot do and still be a missionary, so also are there things a Navajo trickster cannot do and still be a Navajo. And perhaps there are things that a Mormon cartoonist cannot do and still be a Mormon. And I'm just very happy that I'm not a cartoonist and have to decide on any given day of the week what that is.
For 8 minutes, we can have questions, and please tell us who the question is directed to.
They're usually males, but that doesn't mean that there aren't the female tricksters. John Harrison and I have been collecting stories for a long time, and as in the recent years, then we're getting more and more sister missionaries. But most of our focus is on male missionaries rather than on the female missionaries. No, we haven't worked with couples. This will change. They say, I've had four children, two girls, two boys. The young women have both gone on missions, so have the young men. And so earlier that wasn't the case. And as the women become more and more part of that missionary force, then I suspect we'll find we just have to keep collecting and studying to see what's happening. But these tricksters that I'm talking about here are almost all males.
I was called up to go to the Ensign magazine, the art department up there, and they call, we've got a cartoon for you to illustrate. You just, you know, we can't use yours, but we've got one. And they had a list of about 25 ideas. And I ran up to the church. I took the elevator to the 23rd floor. I went up there, and he was all excited. It was a story about how an adamine diamond, that there was this tourist would go there. And there was this place, and it's supposed to be like a pile of rocks, and this is, legend has it, was supposed to be the altar that Adam made, you know. And so the tourists were there, and they were taking these Mormon tourists and picking some rocks, putting them in their station wagon, and this farmer drives up, and he says, you know, I've been piling rocks for my field over here for years and years and years, and it never gets any bigger. And they went back, they said yes, and they went back and took the rocks out of their car and put them back in the pile for the first time. But the fact is, and he was so excited, but then he looked, and the church correlation had crossed it off. And it was the only one on the top of the list that, you know, it was the very first one. We couldn't do it. And it was really fun. I can understand the situation, but what's important is that those things do exist. You know, we might not officially be able to, in certain areas, be able to do those kind of things or use that kind of humor, but it will continue. And so we must remember that.
Well, okay. One more question.
What college do you hold
in the world? Second place. Nursery correspondent. That's my favorite one, was the nursery. I mean, I was on their level, and I really enjoyed it. I home teach sometimes. Quite well. It's difficult. I'm not an administrative type person. It's not so much that I do cartoons. I have a very difficult time telling people what to do. I'd rather make fun of their ideas than do it. And I was an elders' quorum president one time, and I was there for a while, but when it was time for me to stop doing that, I was grateful to God that since then, I don't volunteer for any more missions behind any lines. It's just the thing. But if people need a hand, like at the war, they had a war fair last, and they need somebody to run the VCR and give out popcorn to the kids and clean up the mess. I stay with the vacuum cleaner afterwards and clean up all that stuff. I'm used to it with my kids, you know. There's always something you can do in the church, and I think that's just as important as anything else.
Well, my calling in the word is to let my neighbors work on somebody.
You're doing a good job, too.
My calling in the word is to give my neighbors somebody to work on.
Well, okay. Thanks for your participation.